You know, Shawshank Redemption really is a great movie if you have not seen it. You know, I don't know much about the people who wrote the screenplay or the producers. One thing I do understand is they understand, they have this great understanding of the change process, of what it means to spiritually change, which is actually the word redemption. In fact, redemption is when God takes something, when God comes in and takes something in its current form and changes it for a higher purpose. And that's exactly what we saw right there in that little scene from the movie Shawshank Redemption. In fact, you know, what we saw was somebody who was in their current situation and they made a break. They said, it's time to make a break. I'm going to move out of that situation. And they went kind of through this intermediary process. So it's what he was doing is he was like crawling through the pipe, through a whole bunch of mess and awfulness, and eventually came out the other side cleansed, came out the other side free. And there's a process here. There's actually four very distinct phases that we saw right there and that we're going to talk about today. And before we do that, great to see you here this morning, by the way. My name's Kurt, and really excited to have you here this morning as we're in week two, as Eric said, of this series. And I just want to pray before we really dive deep into this today. So let's do that. God, I'm thankful we can come into a place like this. We can come into a dark room, and as a result of our time here for a little over an hour, God, I would ask that you would just connect with wherever we are, with wherever each of us individually are at. God, I would ask today that it wouldn't be me talking, but that, God, you would get a sense of exactly what we need today and that you would speak to us or impress us or maybe give us thoughts or whatever it is that is needed today. Give us a sense. God, I know that you can do things that I can't do, and I ask, God, that you would just help every single one of us to grow in some way, to take a step in some way today as a result of our time here. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. We know that process that Tim Robbins went through, if you're familiar with that movie, it is very much the redemption process. It's the exact same process that the nation of Israel went through when they broke out of bondage and slavery to Egypt. In fact, how many of you, just out of curiosity, have seen the movie The Ten Commandments? Charlton Heston, a number of years ago. Wow. You call yourself an American, you haven't seen The Ten Commandments. Come on. It's like, or maybe like DreamWorks film, The Prince of Egypt. Remember that one? That was like, a few more of you. Maybe if you didn't see those, you actually read the story in the Bible, though I doubt that. The movies are a lot more engaging, but either way, you know, if you saw the movie or you've read the story, you know that there's a change process. You know, there's this redemption process that takes place, and it's the exact same process that every single one of us today are in. In fact, as we go through these today, you're going to find that we're all in one of the phases. In fact, for many of us, we're probably in multiple phases depending on the issue in our lives. And so, we're going to look at these four phases today, and I just want to jump right into it. And so the first phase that we oftentimes encounter in the change process is what's called the blahs. The blahs. And the nation of Israel was in the blahs, and they were for a long time. They're just experiencing, I mean, it's not like anything incredibly great is happening at that particular time. It's not like anything absolutely terrible's happened. It's just like, it's like the status quo. It's like the way things are. And so the blahs are your current situation where things are just kind of coasting along. Nothing great happened, nothing terrible. And yet at the same time, we can't see that things could be better. It's just kind of like blah. You know, I don't know what to do. It's just kind of the way it is. And here's the thing. The nation of Israel, you know, you'd think that if they were in slavery for like hundreds and hundreds of years, you think that they would actually have a plan to break out of that slavery, to break out into freedom, but they don't. And so right away, they're just kind of content with where they are. They're content with their current situation. They're in the blahs. And so God sends this guy named Moses, who's among the Israelites, and he says, you need to go and you need to free your people. So Moses goes to the leader of Egypt, a guy by the name of Pharaoh, and he begins to kind of barter with him. He says, hey, you got to let my people go. Hundreds of thousands of Israelites in slavery. He's like, you've got to let us go. And he just keeps going back and going back and going back. And eventually Pharaoh's like, you are annoying me. In fact, you're annoying me so much, here's what I'm going to do. I'm actually going to double your workload. All right? And that's actually one of the phases that things that happen in this first phase is when we begin to realize I'm in the blahs, sometimes it actually gets worse before it gets better. In fact, here is what happens in Exodus 5, verse 22. It says, Moses returned to the Lord and said, oh Lord, why have you brought trouble among this people? Is this why you sent me? And what Moses is basically saying right there is he's saying, hey, you know, before you ask us to change, before you ask me to come in and help there be a break right here, man, you know, life was pretty good. I mean, life was predictable. It was nice. We could manage what we had going on. I mean, it wasn't all that great, but it wasn't awful. It wasn't just terrible either. It was just kind of blah. And he's like, you know, there was no turmoil. There were no ulcers. There was no tension. There was no tragedies. And yet, when we find ourselves in those places, there's also no advancement. We find ourselves in the blahs. There's no advancement either. There's no, you know, moving to the next place. There's no, you know, growing in my intimacy, my relationship with God. And you just kind of stay right where you are. You know, how many of you have used that line, just out of curiosity, that I shared with you last week about the toddler? Remember the one about the toddler where it's like, you remember that line? Because if you don't remember, I get to say it again. Because I love that line. The line about, you know, you just how you sit around in your crap all the time. Yeah, you're like, oh, yeah. All right, well, you know, yeah, it's like, you know, we're like a toddler, right? Because this really connects with the blahs. You're like a toddler. You're sitting in a dirty diaper, and you're like, man, it stinks, and it's warm, but, you know, it's mine, so I think I'm going to keep it. And we just stay right there, right? We just stay there. We don't move. We don't go anywhere. And so for some of us, you know, we might be in the blahs financially. I mean, you might be in that place where there's way more month left at the end of your money, and every month you get there, and yet you make it to the end via Visa, and so you stay in debt. You stay in debt, and you're in the blahs. You've learned to live with that. In fact, I saw just this last week by CNN Money gave a statistic on the credit card debt of today at the end of 2012, and they said this is for people who don't pay their balances off every month. So if you take all of those people that pay their balances every month, for the rest of the population that has credit card revolving debt one month to the other, the average family carries $16,000 worth of debt just in revolving debt. And here's what happens if this is real. And listen, I've been there. Julie and I have gone through a very extensive process, much of what we're talking about today, to actually eliminate all of that and our cards in our lives. But here's what you go through. You begin to just live with it. You begin to be okay with it. You're like, oh, it's blah. It's not great, but it's not like, oh, it's terrible. And so you just adjust and begin to make that your status quo. That's why Eric kind of ran through those what our free counseling ministry does here, so you can understand the process that it's there to actually help you take steps to get out of the blahs. I mean, maybe you're in a dating relationship, and the relationships come to that place where you're like, you feel like the next step is really maybe getting sexually involved and going to that sexual level, and maybe you don't understand that God's not really into that thing. He says there's a certain context for that, or maybe you do understand that, but you don't really care, or maybe you understand that that's what God says, but you know, you have a moment of weakness. Regardless of the scenario, you end up in a place where, you know, your relationship goes sexual. And all of a sudden, it gets very, very complicated. All of a sudden, there's this emotional kind of connection, this emotional factor that just goes through the, you know, through the roof. And all of a sudden, there's this deep emotional connection when that takes place. And the relationship isn't in that great a place. But all of a sudden, there's all these strings attached to it. And there's all these inner intricacies that keep it there. And you're like, you know, I don't even know that I want the relationship to continue. And yet, you can't imagine getting out of the relationship because of these connections, these deep emotional connections that are there. And you're just stuck in the blahs because you just kind of learn to live with it. You know, or maybe, you know, maybe your kids are in the blahs. That's supposed to be funny, by the way. I thought that would be funny. You know, no, seriously, you look into your kids' eyes and it's not like they're thriving, right? I mean, it's not like they're tanking, but they're just kind of existing. And so, you know, they don't annoy you. I mean, they might annoy other people, but they don't annoy you. So you've not gotten to the place where you're going to address something. And so, you know, there's nothing strategic that you're doing to actually advance them and move them forward. And listen, you know, what happens when we're in the blahs, if we don't recognize it and begin to make a change, it eventually goes to the brutals. And when you get to the brutals, then you're forced to make a change. Right? So how this plays out is like if you're in a dating relationship and it's gone sexual and you're not in the context of marriage, it's not bound by the context of a marriage relationship, and all of a sudden, you know, the woman gets pregnant. And all of a sudden, you know, somebody doesn't take responsibility, right? And they're like, I'm out of here. And all of a sudden, that's the brutals, and a change is forced. The circumstances make the change for you. Or if your children, you know, eventually you don't strategically build into them and they eventually become adolescents and maybe a substance abuse, you know, kind of creeps in. And then all of a sudden you're like, man, this is brutals now. And a change is forced to take place. See, the key in the blahs, is to recognize when I'm in the blahs, when it's not mandated that I have to make a change, to realize that if before it goes to the brutals, I need to begin to realize I can actually move from here and go to a new place. And listen, I hate when we go through things and there's no application on it. So, you know, the worst thing that could happen today is we get to the end of this morning and you walk out of here and you're like, man, those were some like really good spiritual principles. I think I'm going to reflect on those. I hate it when I hear stuff like that, all right? We're going to go through an application process at the end of the morning, like we do typically at the end of our services. And we're going to ask you to really say, what does this mean for me? And so even right now, I want to do something a little odd, at least for this point in the service. I want to just pray again and ask God to maybe impress on us what we need to be thinking about this morning. So let's do that. Bow your head if you want to and pray with me. God, we're sitting here right now and, we've got our heads bowed and, we don't do this stuff to just fill up an hour in our week. I mean, there's a lot of other things we can be doing. We do this because we want all of us to grow. We want all of us to change. And so God, before I talk anymore, I want to kind of give us the opportunity right now to really identify what and where we're stuck in the blahs. Where is that air? Just impress that in our mind right now or on our hearts. Maybe speak that to us. Help us to recall whatever it is that we've really been like, oh, I don't like this part of my life. And just to really begin to reflect on that and say, okay, this is what I need to be thinking about. I've given a few examples of finances and kids and relationships. God, there are dozens. There are dozens and dozens of places where we get stuck in the blahs. So God, I just pray that you would give us an impression right now. All right, now I'm going to trust that you've got something on your mind now. And if you don't, then hopefully that'll come to you. Because, what I want us to think about is that thing. I want us to say, okay, in that thing that I just kind of came to me, what does it look like to change here? What's the next phase if I'm going to be able to move out of this right here? And so the first phase is the blahs. The second phase is what's called the break. It's called the break. And that's the moment where you leave where you are and you go to a new place. And this is what the nation of Israel did. They actually broke. In fact, here's what it says in Exodus chapter 12. It says, now the length of time the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all of the Lord's divisions left Egypt. And so when they broke, they actually got out of bondage. They actually began right here to leave that area, that place where they were in bondage. And there's certain things that were supposed to happen for them at this point. They were going to the promised land, and that hadn't happened yet. They hadn't got there. They were supposed to be growing in their relationship with God. That was just beginning. And so there were certain things that were going to happen that hadn't began yet, but they had made the break to begin that process. See, there's always got to be a definitive time where I break, where I say I'm going to move now from right where I am and begin to go somewhere else. And that's what the break is. It's when you choose to make a specific action, a break from your current situation to produce growth or to go to that new place. Now, last week I talked some about some of the tests we go through and kind of evaluating where we are. What are some of the changes? What's the test on my desk that I need to pass in order for me to go to that next new place? And talked a little bit about bitterness, about some of us need to move past some envy or bitterness or some resentment that we have. And I've taught on these principles before. In fact, these are things that I use quite frequently. And so this might be, intentional strategic redundancy for some of you if you've been here, if you've been longtime cross pointers. But, this is going to hit you at a different place today because your life is at a different place, hopefully. And so, the last time I was talking about this, I had somebody come up to me and they came up and they're like, Kurt, I've dealt with some pretty severe sexual abuse, way back in my childhood. And, when you've dealt with some kind of trauma like that, you don't just decide like, oh, right now, boom, I'm going to break and everything is great. And I'm like, you're right. You are right. I mean, it doesn't just go that way. And so, if that's where you are, if you've dealt with something really major, really, really big, and you need to make a break from that, you might be in the classroom right now. You might be in that place where the test is in front of you, and you're asking, what does the break look like? Well, see, maybe the break is not eliminating the grief. Maybe the break is when you decide, say, I'm going to go and get counseling this week, and that's a break. Or I'm going to go talk to somebody and share this. I've never shared this with somebody before. I'm going to share this with somebody for the very first time, and that's a break, because anything that's hidden keeps you in bondage. And so that's what a break looks like. It's making a very clear decision to begin the process to go to a new place. And here's what's interesting. We have a very vested interest to not change on this. right? We have a very vested interest. In fact, this is where the physical things in the world and the spiritual things in the world really mirror one another. That's why this series is called The DNA of Change. In fact, that's why there's this double helix there, you know, on the side of this series screen right here, because, you know, this mirrors the physical world when we talk about spiritual change. It's very similar to what happens in our bodies. You know, the cells that are in your body have been reproducing since you were in the embryonic phase, and every cell, as it reproduces, has the same blueprint. Right, it has the blueprint for your entire body. And what happens is, as those cells reproduce, they actually pass on that blueprint to the next cell it produces. And it's one of those things that, you know, what we know about healthy things is anything healthy grows, right? Anything healthy. If you're a healthy individual, as a person, you grow. If you have healthy kids, they grow. If you have unhealthy kids or there's some sickness, sometimes it prevents things from growing. Organizations grow, churches grow, businesses grow. Anything that's healthy grows. And so what takes place is these cells reproduce. And there are certain systems in our DNA that are set up. It's the way our body works to maintain and ensure that the integrity of the DNA remains as those cells are reproduced. Now, when I say the integrity of the DNA, I'm not talking the purity of the DNA. I'm talking that the integrity, that one cell looks exactly like the previous cells, the same blueprint, same DNA. Which means, like, if you're predisposed to have cancer at the age of 40 or something like that, I don't know how that works, I don't know that we fully do yet, you know, that those cells continue to reproduce themselves with that blueprint inside of you. And if the cell comes out differently, there's a code inside your body. Your body reads the different code, and it eliminates the cell. So it actually prevents anything different than the original blueprint. Now, this is very interesting because this is where, like, the physical, you know, really connects with the spiritual. And by the way, like, I don't know all this stuff, right? You're like, man, how does he know that stuff? I was not a biology major. I reached out to some of our scientists here at Crosspoint this week, and they like helped me really understand this. And I may have said some of that wrong. So if you're one of those people, you can talk to me afterwards and correct me. But listen, here's the thing. The body is a way of protecting itself. So change is hard to happen. You know, physically, it's hard for that kind of change to happen. All right, we actually kill off the cells that have a different blueprint. And when it comes to the spiritual world, you and I are wired not to change. We're actually wired, if we come across anything newer than what we've been doing for the last 21 years or the last 81 years, we're wired to reject that. We're wired to say, oh man, I'm perfectly fine the way. What do you mean I need to change? I don't have any behaviors that need to go differently or attitudes. I mean, I'm fine. I am what I am, right, Papa? I am what I am. We just kind of like say, oh, we resist it, and it, because change is very, very difficult. Now, some of you, I'll hear people say right now, like, man, I love change. I love change. I'm always change. You're like a change freak. And if somebody were to look at your life, you know, they're like, you do change. You change your job all the time. You're always changing who you're dating or who you're married to. You change, you know, what church you go to or where you're vacation all the time. Listen, I'm not sure that's change. I think that, you know, that might be more like fickleness. You know, that's we say that's change. Fickleness is like lack of follow through, right? I think that's lack of follow through there. I'm talking change at an internal level. I'm talking change in a sense of how we view the world, change in terms of the things that make us operate a certain way. And when we begin to break these things, it is very, very difficult. You know, last weekend I talked about, again, some of the tests, the bias to action test. Talked about one of my experiences this last year and a suicide that I observed. It really just shook me and how I failed that test right there. And you can go back and listen to it if you want to. But it really got me thinking about suicide and why someone might kind of contemplate suicide at different points in their life. And some of the things I've understood or gained my understanding of as I work with people that have thought about this or in a situation where they're really, you know, struggling with this is oftentimes it's where the blahs, we don't catch something in the blahs and it goes to the brutals and we just feel like, man, there is no way out of this, no way out. Or maybe we're in the blahs and we just don't feel, and we're in the process of change, but it's so hard that we can't see the end of that pipe. We can't see 500 yards down the pipe because we're so stuck in the stink that we actually, we just can't see the end. And when we think, man, I just got, you know, nobody goes out and just says, hey, I'm going to change right now and everything's going to be great. See, there's always a break that happens, a very clear break that begins the pathway to a new place. So for example, like financially, there's got to be a definitive break. That might be cutting up the credit cards. It might be making like a plastic souffle in your oven tomorrow and you know, just saying, hey, we're going to change. I'm going to begin. I'm going to make a break right now and change. It might be with that boyfriend or girlfriend saying, hey, you know, listen, we need to talk. We're done. I'm out of here. You know, see, if there's some unhealthy influence in your life, though, you know, what begins to happen is it actually gets worse. You know, when you make that break, that boyfriend or girlfriend, they like storm the gates on you. They're like, oh, that even makes me attracted to them more because they're like resisting me. So they're like at your door, they're calling you, the credit card bills still show up and you've got to deal with that. And so guess what? The problems don't get over when we make the break, but it's the start of going to a new place. And so that's why it's important to understand the next step. After we make the break, the next step is what's called the blues. The blues. And the blues are what happen after we realize we're in the blahs, we make the break, and we realize we need to go to a new place, we realize we need something more, and yet the problems don't go away. In fact, what we experience is sometimes they get worse. In fact, the nation of Israel, listen, they just had this incredibly miraculous experience. I mean, they broke out of slavery in Egypt, and as they did that, God provided for them. God, like, parted the Red Sea so they could go through it, walk through the Red Sea on dry ground, hundreds of thousands of people walking through this sea as this pathway to freedom. And while they're doing this, Pharaoh decides, hey, why did I let them go? And so he sends his armies to go out after them. And they begin pursuing these Israelites. As soon as the last Israelite gets across that riverbed, that seabed, God collapses the sea back on Pharaoh's armies and wipes them all out. Now, you would think if you were watching that and looking back, seeing that take place, you'd be in this like euphoric state. It was like, oh my word, that was incredible. But take a look at how the Israelites respond right out of this in Exodus 16. It says, in the desert, the whole community grumbled. All right, this is right after this miracle. The whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. I mean, this is like they get to the other side and they're like, hey, where's the Taco Bell? They're like really hungry after going through the sea, right? And somebody's like, there's no Taco Bell here. What are you talking about? They're like, well, what about Chipotle? There's no Chipotle here either. And so all of a sudden, you know what, they're like, well, we had all this great food when we were back in Egypt. And see, this is what happens in the blues phase. You know what you begin to do in the blues phase? You begin to fantasize about the past. You begin to fantasize about where you've been. The Israelites were like, man, it was great. We had all kinds of great food when we were in slavery. And this always happens. And what happens in the blues phase is this short circuits the change process. At this point right here, we actually go back oftentimes and we don't complete the change process because the blues set in. Right? The blues set in. And it's kind of like, hello, you were slaves. You're fantasizing about how great it was when you were in slavery, how good the food tasted because it's harder now as you make the break. And we fantasize about that unhealthy influence in our dating relationship, yet we fantasize about, oh man, there were certain things were so good. Or we fantasize about that, you know, that electronic we bought on credit and how great it was, even though we didn't have the money to buy it, how great it was to buy it and then pay for it for like 6 years, right? I mean, see, we fantasize. This is what always happens. We fantasize about it because we can't take the blues. And sometimes it gets worse. Sometimes the immediate feelings, the immediate circumstances even, they get worse. And this is always the way it works. It works physically this way. It works spiritually this way. For example, out of curiosity, how many of you have been doing the gym since first year? Just since first year, right? And you're like, oh, it's hard. My muscles hurt. I'm in pain. And then you feel guilty, right? Because you made this commitment to go to the gym. And if you don't go to the gym, you feel guilty. And then if you do go to the gym, you feel guilty because there's a time frame that you used to spend doing other things and you can't do those things now. This is always the way it works when we make a break and are in the blues. America, you know, we have these nice 13 little colonies over here, right? And we're like, no, we need to make a break from England. So what do? We sign the Declaration of Independence, right? Everybody's like, man, we're making a break. And then all of a sudden, a couple months later, the blues set in. Because it took a couple months for that document to get back to the King of England. And when he gets that, he sends his warships over to America's. And all of a sudden, the blues are there. This is how it takes place in every process. When we go from the blahs to the break, and the break, we immediately go into the blues. And this is the reason, really believe, this is the reason we often shortchange the change process. You know, when I meet with people who are dealing with, heavy issues, marriage issues, what I call like major marriage violations, addictions that are affecting a marriage, affairs, those kinds of things, you know, oftentimes there's a very definitive point in that conversation where the person who's been violated, the person who's been hurt, will often say something like this. They'll say, well, you know, I can go on if my spouse can say they will never do that again. And usually there's this long dramatic pause. And I'll look at them, I'll be like, you can do this, you can do this. And they'll be like, no, man, I don't know that I can do this. I mean, I've tried before. I've tried. I've failed. I mean, what if this happens? I don't know that I can commit to that. I'm like, you can do this. And there's always this sense of like, what, can I really do this? Can I really step up and do this? And that's a key thing. And here's what I've discovered. For people who actually do go through that process, who commit and say, yeah, I'm gonna commit. I'm not going to do this. The reason that they can do that and have follow through is because they've put some kind of automated process in place. It's always the key. The key to pushing through the blues, if you're in the blues right now, is putting some automated process in place. I can say to them, hey, you have something right now that you didn't have in previous years. I mean, it might be that their automated system is going to church. That's how I came in contact with them. And going to church and worshiping together with your spouse is an automated system that you didn't have previously that now really helps you grow and challenges you to go to new places. You might be in a small group now, where you're kind of like, sharing some of your garbage and connecting with people and sharing your crap. And that's actually helping you. That's something you've never had in place before. It's an automated system that's actually helping you go to a new place. Because see, when we're in the blues, we often revert back to our old tactics and we rely on ourselves instead of putting some automated system, something automatic that takes us into a new vein. Somebody said to me back when Julie and I began to really make this financial transformation, I heard somebody say, you don't have time to worry about what bills you have to pay and how to save every 2 weeks. And I'm like, exactly, that's my problem. I don't have time. And what they were really saying is you need to automate things in your life, Kurt. There's certain things you need to automate so that you can go on living your life and you don't have to think about them. And that was a real key for us. As we worked out of some of our debt and just totally wiped out a revolving debt, one of the keys for us was automating things. We met with a financial counselor. We met with somebody who helped us put some automations in place so that the same amount of money every month was going out of our account to pay down the debts that we had. And it was amazing. We could sit back and enjoy life. All we had to do was know what was coming and prepare for it. But I didn't sit around and say, oh, are we going to do this? Are we not? Are we going to save? It was automated. And it was the snowball effect on our debt. It just, we paid one off and that got applied to the next one. And 40 months later, it was gone. It was gone. And church attendance, for some of us, church attendance is, in January and February, is always up here at Cross Point. I don't know why. I mean, actually, I do know why, right? Because, like, we come out of the new year, we're like, man, I'm going to make a spiritual resolution to, grow in God, to be better at going to church. And listen, isn't that what church is? Isn't church an automated system where you come and you are challenged with things that you aren't challenged with in other parts of your life, in any other sector of your life? Where, you're challenged here in a different way than when you're sitting on the couch watching, the pregame kickoff show or, Third Rock or, Top Chef or something like that. You're challenged in ways that you don't get when you're doing those things. And so an automated system would be saying, hey, short of an emergency at 9 or 10:30 on Sunday morning, I'm going to do everything possible to keep this attendance a part of my system because it's a key part of me growing. See, this is the blues, and we have to put automated systems in place to get to the fourth step, which is called the benefits. Fourth phase is the benefits. In Joshua chapter 21, this is long, long, long time after the Israelites made the break out of Egypt. And they didn't receive the benefits because the Israelites immediately didn't receive the benefits because they did a lot of things that nullified the change process. And they did a lot of things, and we're not going to get into a lot of that right now, but here's what Joshua, who was a part of that Israelite community that broke out of Egypt, said years and years later. So the Lord gave Israel all the land he had sworn to give their forefathers, and they took possessions of it and settled there. That was the promised land. The Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their forefathers. Not one of their enemies withstood them. The Lord handed all their enemies over to them. Not one of all the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Everyone was fulfilled. Now there are two great ways for great things to happen in your life, two venues. And we all want that, right? We all want to be in a better place. We all say, yeah, I want my life to be good, to feel good, to be good. There are two great ways. I want that, right? We all want that. There are two great venues or ways by which great things happen in our life. The first venue is this. The first venue is what's called grace. And grace is when God gives us what we don't deserve, right? That's just how God's wired. He gives us what we don't deserve. That's what grace is. I don't deserve it. That's why you sit around and you're like, how's calm those terrible people in my neighborhood or that slimy person? Oh, look at everything they have. Why is that? You know, maybe it's the person next to you this morning. Why do they have everything they, you know, that was a joke, by the way, too. You guys are a little slow today, like, or maybe you're doing this. You know, why is it that people that, like, are terrible get great things? It's grace. It's unexplainable. That's just the way God works. Sometimes people get things. We get things we don't deserve. Thank God. Thank God I don't get everything I deserve. The first venue is through the venue of grace. The second venue is what's called justice. Now, justice, my favorite story when it comes to justice is, remember that old Olin Mills? I don't think we have Olin Mills around here anymore. Olin Mills Photo Studios. One of my favorite stories about a lady that goes into Olin Mills Photo Studio, and she says to the photographer, now give me justice, give me justice. And he looks at her, and he's like, ma'am, no offense, but with a face like that, you don't need justice, you need mercy. All right? And you can think about that. That's a slow burn. But see, that's grace, all right? That's grace. Justice is where you reap what you sow, right? And that's what we're talking about in the change process, where you reap what you sow. See, there are certain things you and I experience that are just a result of grace. We don't deserve it. We get it. We don't deserve it. And it changes us, but it changes to a certain point. But see, then there's this whole justice piece. God is both graceful and a God of justice. There's justice where you actually reap what you sow. Where you say, I'm gonna engage in certain disciplines or behaviors or certain things that I know will come with benefits at the end. Because when I do these things, when I work out, my body looks different physically at the end. And spiritually, we say, I'm gonna engage in certain disciplines, practices, because there's a process where I reap what I sow. And when I'm in the blahs and I realize it and I recognize it and I make a break, and then I go from the break immediately into the blues, fantasizing about the past, how good it was, I begin to question whether I really should continue this change. And then there's the benefits. See, to go through that process, there are certain disciplines we have to build in. And, you know, here's the thing. Your marriage can change. Your marriage does not have to stay where it is right now. I believe every single marriage has the potential to change. It has the ability to go to a new place. Your financial situation. It does not have to stay in the blahs. It does not have to stay. Maybe you've made some changes and you're in the blues. You can continue to go. There are certain disciplines when you put them into place that they actually are the automated mechanisms that take you to the next place. Your body does not have to stay the way that it is. And unfortunately, grace doesn't come into play very often with our bodies, right? I mean, for those of us that have bad bodies, God doesn't just say, oh, he didn't come down and be like, I'm going to take like 30 pounds off of you right here, right? It's usually all justice. You know, you reap what you sow. Though, grace does come in, right? Because some of you can still eat 4 bags of Cheetos and it never shows up, right? I used to do that. I can't do it anymore, right? But you know, you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. And here's what I would assume. As we close, here's what I would assume. There's probably the thing you've been thinking about today, the thing that maybe needs to continue to change. Maybe it was there and it's been in the blahs for a long time and you didn't recognize it and move on it. So you've never experienced the break from that thing. You've never experienced putting automated systems in place to move through that thing, and so you're not experiencing the blessings. That would be my assumption. And so, you know, as we think about this, you know, and as we, you know, blessings are not nirvanas, all right? Blessings are not like, oh, I'm on top of the world and everything's great and man, I just have everything worked out. No, because you know what happens? We talked last week, as soon as you get through one test, what happens? You go into another test. Why is that? It's because God's desire for you is the same that he had for the nation of Israel. It's the very same thing. It's to grow you and change you and take you to new places, but his goal isn't the promised land. His goal isn't, you know, to give you everything that you want or you think you want. His goal is through the change process to know you, for you to know him, for you to lean on God and say, God, I need you to grow me in this process and take me to a new place in my relationship with you. It's the only goal God has. So as PJ sings this song, I want you to really reflect on this song, these words, you know, surely I can change. And we're going to do some application here in a few moments where you're going to really kind of map out and say, okay, where do I go? But listen to these words and just allow God to kind of impress on you as you listen.
Take a moment and let's pray. God, as we listen to the songs, we saw the words on the screen. as we listened to Kurt speak this morning and maybe even had an opportunity to identify maybe that area in our life where we need to break. You know, I pray, God, that you would help us do that. We're all in different places in this journey. And for some of us, you know, we might be in that blah stage, and others, we may have heard what's going on this morning and what we've talked about this morning and just be like, whatever, that's just not me. That's not where I'm at. I'm not ready for that. And there's other of us, maybe we knew what that area in our life was that we needed to take a break, or maybe, God, you revealed it to us this morning. But we've tried to change in the past, and we've listened to that voice in our head, or maybe it's been our own spoken voice, or maybe someone else has even said, you can't change, it's not possible. And so we're stuck in this perpetual blah area of our life, God. We pray that you would just help us to identify that area, God, that we'd be able to bring it to you, that we'd be able to put places, things into our lives that would help us break from that. That when the blues come, God, that we would be able to hear your voice and not look back into those things and go, well, you know what, that wasn't so bad. Or there are a lot of good things from that, God, but that you would give us strength to work past that voice of the blues. And ultimately, God, we want to reap the benefits of what you have for us. And as we're on this journey to be these people that you have designed us to be, God, so this morning we just pray for that change. We ask it in your name, amen. Kurt had mentioned that we just don't want this to be a time of just talking about these things and thinking, that's good, I get that, I understand that. But really there'd be some practical application. And so if you could take that connection card that we talked about earlier, if you could grab that, take that out. In the back, you're going to see some areas that we call next steps. So this is not just something that you just walk away from today, but you're able to maybe take that next step towards that change that you're looking for in your life. One of the things Kurt had mentioned too is that there are always these tests that come about. Maybe you've experienced breakthrough in your life and you're like, well, now I've got this thing in my life. I don't get that. That's just part of life. Again, it's part of this journey that we're on to be the person that God designed us to be. I can think about that in my life, of a particular breakthrough I've had in my life. There's about a decade where I went through where I wasn't the person that I wanted to be. I pretty much hated myself. And I lived in kind of that secret and that silence for so long until I got to the point where I just felt like enough was enough. And I wanted to make that break. I had to proclaim it, kind of. I had to talk to somebody about it. And so maybe that's where you're at today, where you're just like, I'm tired. I'm ready to make that break. Maybe that's your next step today, to kind of get out of the blahs. You know, Kurt talked about, too, about this whole idea of putting areas of automation in our life to kind of help us get through that. And I was right there too, of going, you know, I tried to do this on my own for so long, and I couldn't do it. So it was talking to somebody about it. And I saw a counselor for about a year or so. That was kind of an area of automation I put into my life. I don't know if that's what it is for you, but maybe that's your next step. If talking to somebody, maybe here at Crosspoint, to help you through wherever you happen to be at this point, you can mark you want to talk with a counselor, and we can get you in contact with somebody through Crosspoint so that you can get on that journey. Or maybe it's simply saying, you know what, I'm going to be here at Crosspoint. Or if you walked in this morning and thought, you know what, I have no idea what it means to have a relationship with Jesus. I don't really know a whole lot about God. But what I've heard this morning is, I want that. I want him in my life to help me begin to make that change in my life. If that's you, make that in your connection card, and we'll definitely help you through that process. So take a moment, think about these things you've already have, and so identify that next step as the band gets ready to lead us in some more music.